Trib Live Radio presents Panther Lair, hosted by Pitt insider Chris Peek of PantherLair.com. A full hour of Pitt football, basketball, and recruiting.
For another hour of all Pitt sports talk, we are America's longest-running Pitt sports talk show slash podcast, and we're glad you could tune in. As always, the website Panther-Lair.com, most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet. Cover everything football, basketball, and recruiting. And I guess we got to start, of course, with Tyler Boyd. The news: arrested early Friday morning, or charged. He's been formally charged. He was detained, blah, 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 the technicalities. It's a DUI, and you hear different things coming out. Some things are being officially reported, some from blah, all this kind of thing. What it comes down to, he's probably going to enter the ARD program for first-time offenders. I'm not a legal expert. I guess I shouldn't even really speculate on what his legal consequences are going to be. I got to imagine whatever this is, it'll turn into some consequences at Pitt for Boyd, probably involving that season opener against Youngstown State, and that seems to make sense to me. That seems fair. Either it's a serious offense. DUI is no joke, and they're, you know, you're taking a risk anytime you drive after drinking. We know that. And the penalties are stiff because they have to be. We were fortunate in this situation that no one was hurt. There were no real life consequences, but there will be. And there should be some consequences. You're in the spotlight, and that brings consequences if you're Tyler Boyd or someone like him. You know, it's not quite that Spider-Man quote. It's not a paraphrase that with great power comes great responsibility. We all have that responsibility to stay out of those kinds of things. This, if you go smoke weed on McKnight Road and you get caught, it's not going to be on the front page of the sports section or the front page of the news, of the whole paper, of the A1. But if it's Tyler Boyd or it's Le'Veon Bell or anyone else who gets in minor trouble like this, stuff that wouldn't even show up in the police blotter if it happens to you or it happens to me, when it happens to them, it's news. It's in the paper. It's on TV. That's how it works. And maybe it's not fair. Maybe these people should be afforded the same level of privacy that you and I are, but that's how it works. Dumb stuff and make a mistake. And again, not to downplay it, but I mean, that's what this ultimately seems to come down to. They just made a dumb mistake and got caught and they're in trouble for it. And you have to be smarter than that. And really, you know, I mean, you could extend it and say this would be a lesson for us all. If you have had two shots and it's 2:30 in the morning in Jefferson Hills, don't swerve around a car who's turning. Just wait. But you or I, we're going to get in trouble for something like that, but it's not going to be on the front page of the sports section. If you're Tyler Boyd, I think there was a lesson to be learned here. Football program, and that all makes sense to me. He probably should pay those penalties. And that's it. We'll see what comes out as the trial approaches. I think he has a day in court. I think he has a court date, August 5th, I think is what the Post-Gazette or the Trib reported. So we'll see what comes out of that and what Pat Narduzzi decides to do beyond that. Got a lot of stuff we're going to cover today's show. We've got continuing our position-by-position preview of the 2015 Pitt football team. We're done with offense. We did the offensive line. This to be one of Pitt's best offensive lines in years and how that could translate into great success for the team as a whole. And it was very fawning and it was very positive and optimistic. And now we're going to talk about defensive ends, and there's not quite much of any of those things. There's not a lot of fawning. There's not a lot of optimism. It was a bleak picture last year, and I'm not sure if it's going to get much better this year. But we'll talk about it. We'll talk about where the defensive ends have been, why they're in the state they're in right now, and if and how they can get better going down the road. Then we're going to shift our focus after that to GeorgiaTechRivals.com site. He's going to tell us a little bit about Georgia Tech and whether or not their defense is good enough to force 6 fumbles in a game, including 5 on the first 5 possessions. And doing some research, getting ready to talk to Kelly, I got to tell you that I don't think I had blocked out that game, but just remembering and going through and looking at the score sheet from that game last year and seeing just fumble touchdown, fumble touchdown, fumble touchdown, fumble touchdown. I mean, they forced fumbles on Pitt's first 5 possessions, scored on 4 of those 5 yards, and getting the ball knocked out from behind. The ball then rolling into the end zone and out of the end zone, thus going over, turning possession over to the defense. That was probably the biggest killer out of all those fumbles, because that was, you know, right after Georgia Tech had forced a fumble and they went ahead, and then boom, Pitt, you know, Connor just takes off for 70 yards and it looks like, all right, Pitt's back in this. They're going to be all right. And that rule still makes no sense to me. How is it that if you fumble a ball and it goes out of the back of the end zone, the defense automatically gets it? They didn't do anything. They didn't recover the ball at that spot, you know, a half yard line or whatever. And if it slid 7 inches further, or 12, you know, 10 inches further and went just inside the pylon and out of bounds, it would be Georgia Tech's ball. I mean, it's just a matter of inches. I don't understand that rule. I remember we talked to, Pitt's coaches the next week, and we asked Joe Rudolph, the offensive coordinator, and we asked Matt House, the defensive coordinator, what they thought about that rule. Not surprisingly, the offensive coach said the offense should keep the ball, and the defensive coach said the defense should get the ball. That rule still makes no sense to me. That was the Tech's defense would have stopped them a couple of times, whereas I don't know if Pitt's defense ever would have stopped Georgia Tech's offense. So I might, instead of 56-28, it might have been 56-48 or something like that. 56-49 or something. You know, I still think Georgia Tech would have just gone up and down the field on Pitt like they did. So we'll see if Pitt's chances are any better this season. We'll get the lowdown from Kelly Quinlan from JacketsOnline.com about what he sees out of Georgia Tech for this season. And period in college football that currently starts on the first Wednesday of February and extends until April 1st, but it's all signing day on the first Wednesday in February. And this whole topic of whether or not to have an early signing period. And Paul Johnson said at one point, you know what, let's have no set signing period at all. Let's just be from the end of your junior year, you can sign at any time. And I think that's pretty interesting. I think that's a pretty interesting idea. And he's not the only one who said it. I think Bo Pelini actually has said it as well. If you had a summer signing period, I think what I would do, if I could control college football, what I would do is add a signing period that starts, say maybe, give it 2 weeks, June 15th to June 30th. And what you would need to do is add an official visit period from May 1st to June 15th. Or you could make it the last week of June, and you could have an official visit period from May 1st through the last week of June. You need the official visit period because kids need to be able to go visit schools not on their own dime. From Ohio visiting Pitt today, and he's there on his own dime. Well, you know, or they're recruiting a kid from Georgia, or they're recruiting a kid from Texas. If they want to come up and visit right now, or a kid from Florida, and they want to come visit, they got to pay for that. And that's just to visit Pitt. If they want to visit 5 schools this summer, they have to pay for every single one of those. If you make an official visit period from May 1st to June 23rd, then you've got, 7 weeks, sometimes 8 weeks, where the kids will be able to take official visits, go check out the signing period would do. And I think this is partially, or at least part of, the coach's hesitation with it. The biggest thing I think an early signing period to do is make everybody really put their money where their mouth is. If you're a recruit and you commit, all right, sign the paper. And if you say, I don't really know if I want to sign the paper, well then I don't really know if you're actually committed. And the same way with a coach. These coaches anymore, and it's not the norm, it's not a majority, but there's a whole lot of it going on where a coach will say to a kid, we're offering you a scholarship, but we really want you to come. Kid says, let me sign on the paper. Coach says, let's wait a little bit on it. Okay, the kid knows where he stands right then if you do this. Whereas right now, a kid doesn't actually know until we get to August 1st, I guess it is, when they can start receiving written offers. Now, the written offers are not even binding, but at least it's a little bit more firm, is a little bit more of a tangible thing you can hold. But you can't get those until August 1st of your senior year, prior to your senior year. You want to commit, and the coach would say, okay, sign this paper, and boom. The kid doesn't have to worry about losing his scholarship to a school, and the coach doesn't have to worry about losing the kids who are committed. Like in the past 2 years, Pitt has lost kids right before signing day. Well, you don't have to worry about that if you get them signed in June. Now, you'd have to change the recruiting calendar. Like I said, you'd have to have official visits in the spring. But, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing to add an extra official visit period. And I really think it makes sense for everybody. Ooh, preview here. Why wait, right? Why hesitate? Let's jump right into it. Defensive ends. Because I got a lot to say about this. And we do want to talk to Kelly Quinlan here in about 20 minutes. So I want to get into this defensive end conversation as we preview Pitt for the 2015 football season. We're going position by position, and it was really fun to talk about the offense. It was fun to talk about quarterback, even though I have some questions there. It was fun to talk about running backs, receivers, tight ends, the offensive line, but that was a good time because we talked about all the experience and talent they have. And then there's defense second out of like 121 teams. Pitt ranked number 102 in sacks per game. Incidentally, that wasn't the worst number in the ACC. Florida State actually was worst in the ACC at sacks per game. They had 1.21 sacks per game, ranked number 114 nationally. But Pitt really struggled to get pressure. They had seven games with one sack or zero sacks. They had only one sack total in the final five regular season games. A big part of the defensive issues, I think, was the lack of pressure. Passing yards per game allowed, 14th. Listen to that, 14th in the nation in completion percentage allowed. Really not bad numbers against the pass. Some of those like volume numbers, like total passing touchdowns allowed, part of it was due to the fact that Pitt didn't have a lot of passing attempts against. But 14th in completion percentage, that's not a bad number to be 14th in the nation. And I was a little surprised to see that. Really, given kind of that I sort of bought into the narrative that everyone else has to see some of those numbers. But I think it's on a more micro level. And when you look closer at it, it's the crucial points in games, specifically late in the games against Duke, North Carolina, and Houston. The lack of pressure late in those games led to big plays in the passing game, and I think it cost Pitt those three games. Those are three wins Pitt could have and should have had with a little bit of pressure on the quarterback. And that's the difference between going 6-7 and 9-4. But Duke, Carolina, and Houston, they had no pressure. They struggled to get pressure on the quarterback, and it resulted in losses. And it was no pressure at key times. It was a lack of pressure at key times. They had three sacks against Houston. Well, that's good. But only one was in the fourth quarter, and that happened when the score was still 31-6. They had multiple chances at North Carolina, ended up with zero sacks down at Carolina. Just getting one, just capitalizing on one opportunity for a sack would have changed the game and probably won it for Pitt. That was the biggest issue for me with the defense. Other things that were wrong with the defense or some other things that held back the defense. There were schematic issues. I won't deny that. But the inability to get pressure on the quarterback was as big of a problem as anything else. Now, and the problem is there are things you can do schematically. You know, there are things you can do to improve schematically, but I think the issues for Pitt's defense last year, when you talk about schematics, were more rooted in the coverage schemes and the approach to stopping the run. Rushing the passer, I think, was a different issue. It was about talent. Sure. Defensive ends produced 9 sacks in 13 games. You can include Nicholas Grigsby if you want, because he sort of sometimes lined up at defensive end and sort of sometimes moved around, and he was standing up and had his, I don't know if he had his hand on the ground all that much. He had 3 sacks, so you could go all the way up. If you want to count him as a D end, you could go all the way up to 12 sacks in 13 games from the defensive end position. Of those 9 sacks, though, going back to the guys who are just straight defensive ends, of those 9 sacks, only 5 returned. David Durham had 3 sacks. Pitt was thin, Pitt was unproductive, and it's probably not a stretch to say that defensive end was the team's worst position last season. You can make a case for defensive tackle. They were pretty ineffective as well. We'll talk about them next week. But even at defensive tackle, I mean, Daryl Render led the team in tackles for loss. He only had 6, but he led the team. The defensive ends for Pitt, by contrast, combined for 12 total tackles for loss in 13 games. That's less than 1 tackle for loss per game. And 9 of those tackles for loss were sacks at the beginning of the year. Truthfully, there's not very far to fall in that regard. Last year, the defensive ends were pretty much David Durham, Rory Blair, and Shakir Soto all season. McLean played a little bit. Zach Poker played a little bit. But that was pretty much all they had, was Durham, Blair, and Soto. This year, they're projected to have 9 defensive ends on scholarship. So that's a good number, right? Well, let's look a little closer. You've got Blair and Soto, so that's good. 2 guys with experience, played a lot of football last year. All right. You've got Juan Price, redshirt sackers who moved to defensive end. Poker played a little bit at DN last year before he got hurt. Green moved to defensive end this spring after playing linebacker. Then you've got 2 redshirt freshmen, Shane Roy and Hez Trahan. They haven't played at all. And your number 9, your 9th defensive end coming in is Alan Edwards. He's a transfer from junior college. Oh, and you also have Dwayne Hendricks, the transfer from Tennessee, who is ineligible to play this year due to the transfer rule. So, out of those 9 scholarship defensive ends, you've got 2 guys who played last year and Green, because he actually lined up at linebacker against Delaware last season. And that's what you have. You've got Soto and Price, Soto and Blair, who played. Price, who hasn't played in 2 years. Poker, who played sparingly in 6 games last season. Reggie Green, who got some garbage time against Delaware. And that's it in terms of experience. On-field experience. You have to live with what you have, though. Maybe somebody will surprise. You know, I mean, Rory Blair was a bit of a surprise last season to come out with 5 sacks. He led the team with sacks. They're older now. Maybe Juan Price stays healthy. That would be a big step in the right direction. If he could stay healthy, I think he could help this defense. Maybe Zach Poker contributes a little bit. Maybe a guy like Reggie Green could maybe get on the field. Maybe the redshirt freshman. Maybe Mark Scarpinato, the graduate transfer from Michigan State, who said he could potentially play D-end or D-tackle. Maybe he gets on the field a little bit. But I use that word maybe a whole bunch, because there's a lot of question marks at this defensive end position. And with that with those question marks, how did this happen? We always, when we look at these positions, we try to go past, present, and future. I mean, that's the present right now. How did this happen, though? And I've talked about this before. If you've ever talked to me about Pitt's defense last year, I talked to a lot of different people about it. I talked on this show about it. I've written about it on the website, panther-lair.com. The answer is always, always, when you want to ask, how did we get to this point? How did a team end up in the state they're in? The answer is always recruiting. And this is why people follow recruiting. Because if you want 2011, during the calendar year of 2010, Dave Wanstead and his staff wanted to sign 4 defensive ends in the class of 2011 because they knew they needed to restock the depth. They were well on their way toward getting 4 defensive ends. One of them very well may have been Shalik Calhoun, who has had a very good career at Michigan State. Now, this is not to say they should not have fired Dave Wanstead because he was going to, you know, restock the DN position. I'm just telling you that this staff who had been around, who, you know, was working on a multi-year plan, knew that the class of 2011 needed to be heavy, contributed very little before moving on himself. 2012 class, Paul Christ's class. He signed Daryl Render as a defensive end who immediately moved to defensive tackle. So if you're keeping track, out of 2 classes, you've got 1, maybe 2 defensive ends, when originally the plan was to sign 4 in just 1 class. 2013, Pitt signed 3 defensive ends, so this was a step in the right direction. Luke McLean, Justin Moody, and Shakir Soto. We talked about Soto, so that's good. McLean left after last season. McLean left the team. And Justin Moody moved to Sean Curtis, who ended up flipping to Ole Miss. So out of really 3 classes that should contribute upperclassmen to this roster, 2011, 12, and 13 classes, they should be the upperclassmen, the juniors, redshirt sophomores, redshirt juniors, seniors, and redshirt seniors should come from those 3 classes. Out of those 3 classes, there is 1 defensive end on the roster, Shakir Soto. 2, if you count Juan Price, because he was kind of part of the 2011 class. So we can count him. Out of 2 classes, where the plan in the very first of those in the current state they are in at defensive end. Because it's been a wasteland of recruiting. And no disrespect to the players that they've signed. No disrespect to the players who are still on the roster. There's only a couple of them. But you just didn't do well enough recruiting defensive ends over the last 5 years. Particularly in those crucial 11, 12, and 13 classes with all the turnover. And I don't know if you want to blame it on coaching turnover or not. Probably, I mean, like, you know, Dave Wanstead was going to get 4 DNs. I don't think they were all going to be as good as Cal or IUP. I think Cal. So, that's why they are where they are. The answer is always in recruiting. We talk about this with the basketball team too. You want to find out why the roster looks like it does, why it looked like it did last year, and why they've done what they've done this offseason. Go back to recruiting, man. It always comes back to recruiting. And this is why people follow recruiting. When I hear people say, well, who cares? Why do people care about recruiting so much? Talk to me when they get on the field. Well, this is why. Because if you follow coming to Pitt, that was a good, he seems like he should be a good addition, for Pitt's defense at DN. I think Rory Blair is a player. I think as he gets older and more mature and stronger and understands the game better, he's going to be really good. And he was pretty good last year. I think there's a chance for Shakir Soto to be productive in his final 2 years. I really do. I think he's big enough that he should be able to make an impact. And they've got a lot of offers out. Now, I'm not sure who they're really a favorite for at defensive end. Might take a little while to start getting some high impact guys. They might need some success 1 year's recruiting class. If you're really thin at defensive end, you can make it up with 1 year's recruiting class. It's just going to take those guys a couple years if you're recruiting to Pitt. If you're recruiting at Alabama, or perhaps LSU, or a few of these programs like that, you can get some DNs who can come in and have an instant impact. That's not very likely to happen at Pitt, and that's not to disparage. I just think Pitt is probably going to end up with more guys that you have to develop over time, which means rebuilding the defensive end position, a project that should have started 4 years ago or 3 years ago, at how you generate pressure. And that's going to come back to Pat Narduzzi, Josh Conklin, Rob Harley, Tom Sims. These guys are going to have to come up with some ways to get pressure on the quarterback, or else you're going to blow games late like they did against Duke, like they did against Carolina, like they did against Houston. So you have to figure it out, or you're going to struggle. You can't rely, and Dave Wanstead sort of proved this. He proved it not in the way that he would want to, but he put up to par. Now, once Greg Romeus came of age and Jabal Sheard came of age, well, things changed. All of a sudden, their defense got really, really good. And that wasn't by accident. They continued just rushing the front four, but they had good guys coming off the edge generating pressure. Pitt may want to get to that point where they can just rush four and create pressure. They're not going to be at that point this year, and they're probably not going to be at that point next year, so there has to be help. They have to find a way to help while that position grows. All right, coming up next, we will talk to Kelly Quinlan. He's the publisher of Jackets On
Bar and Grill. Free parking and free appetizer with lunch or dinner on non-game days. Limited time offer. Located on the North Shore in the D.L. Clark Building. Pittsburgh's original sports bar. Newly renovated and artfully lined with unique and rare sports memorabilia. The Clark Bar and Grill is the ideal setting for lunch, dinner, happy hour, or just watching your favorite sports event. Our restaurant has remained a constant tradition for over 20 years in the ever-evolving city of Pittsburgh, and we're nationally famous for our hand-cracked bar and grill since 1989. Get ready for one delicious morning game changer. Now at Dunkin', you can get any of your favorite breakfast sandwiches on an oven-toasted pretzel roll. Bacon, egg, and cheese. Sausage, egg, and cheese. Steak, egg, and cheese, any egg and cheese on a delicious pretzel roll. Chewy on the inside, crispy on the outside. Oven toasted just for you. It's one big breakfast game changer. Come to Dunkin' today and experience a...
Don't miss the excitement of the Pittsburgh Riverhounds July 4th versus the New York Red Bulls 2. That's sure to contain some fireworks. July 18th, U.S. Women's World Cup star Megan Klingenberg joins the Hounds versus Louisville City. Details at riverhounds.com.
Sturman and Larkin Ford, gear up for spring. Lifetime oil changes, over 100 used vehicles in stock. Over 50 low-mileage Ford-certified units to choose from. Largest certified selection.
To Chris Peak on the Panther Lair Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the Panther Lair Show, Trib Live Radio. Chris Peak, turning our focus to our 2015 opponent preview series. And as we move through the schedule, five games down, we're on to game number six. And that's Georgia Tech. Game at Georgia Tech on October 17th. Always a nice trip down to Atlanta, although Pitt's trip down, the last trip down there wasn't very good, nor was Pitt's experience the last time Georgia Tech came to town. So to team, this 2015 Georgia Tech team, I wanted to ask you, because this has been such a big topic, this early signing period stuff. I'm in favor of it. I'd like to see a period maybe in June. Paul Johnson had some quotes about it, not very recently. I just happened to read them recently, saying he thinks there should be, you know, no finite period at all. Just start as soon as the junior year is over and let everybody sign. And I think Paul Johnson's a pretty smart guy, and I agree with him on some of that. What's your take? Would you like to see an early signing period, setting aside our business motivations of the value of
I think in reality it would just cause such havoc in terms of what was going on with recruitment and, you know, a lot of issues for kids, and it could get kind of ugly, I think, if you have just a free-for-all. But I think, you know, he said in the past, too, that he would like to see them be able to sign in August, you know, before their season starts, so they can have that stuff out of the way before you, you know, then you can focus on high school and you're not worried about, like, getting hurt. Like, one of the things that he's brought up to me in the past is sit out when he has maybe a mild injury, and that's happened a few times around here down in Georgia where you have a kid that's maybe on a team that's not competing for state championship, kind of phone it in a little bit just because they don't want to get hurt. And really, in football, that's the best way to get hurt is going half speed.
Yeah, it's just interesting to me. I think one thing that's interesting is that you would really kind of force everyone to put their money where their mouth is. If you have this early period, coaches would have to really lock into, yes, your offer is legit, and players would have to lock
to mind immediately. That plays the game a little bit. You see a lot of schools kind of drop kids. Tennessee's been kind of notorious for that around here. They've dropped kids who maybe had a subpar senior year or because they oversigned or got a higher caliber commitment or something. And yeah, I mean, it kind of forces you to be really, really true to your evaluations and true to your word, which is something that, really should be applauded in our business. And I think that there's a little too much gamesmanship to go. I think there's ways to do this. It just, everything moves, the pace of a glacier with, when it comes to NCAA stuff. And I expect this to be something that'll be continually tweaked over the next few years.
Well, speaking of Paul Johnson, as we turn our focus to the football team, I was looking back just kind of over his recent record. You know, he had that stretch of 4 years where he had 6, 8, 7, and 7 wins, leading up to last season, which obviously was a very good year for Georgia Tech winning the Coastal Division.
Had over the last few years, those 6, 7, 8 win seasons, they would lose several close games. They just didn't quite have the quarterback play they needed to have. And that's, since Nesbitt got hurt in 2010 at Virginia Tech, they really had not had an elite quarterback or even close to one. It had kind of average quarterback play. And, Justin Thomas is a game changer. And, Paul Johnson has two 10-plus win seasons. And they're poised to do the same kind of thing in 2016, actually, which will be Justin Thomas' senior year. Their schedule is much more favorable for them that year. And I think you could see them put up another 10-win season then.
Well, speaking of Thomas, set a Georgia Tech record for quarterback rushing last season, and I was just sort of surprised about that as I look sort of through the superlatives about him. Is he, is he a big part of the optimism fans have for this season? Is he kind of even, are they talking about him as potentially being an all
tremendous physical gifts and all that combined, along with the offense makes him special. And, the fans really love watching him. And he's fun to watch. That's the thing that's cool about Justin is if you like football, it is fun to watch someone run this offense at such a high level with such speed and skill and confidence in himself, and that's what Justin brings to the table. And the other players buy in, and I think that had a lot to do with why they were so successful last year. A great quarterback can really change.
I guess it's probably not too much of a stretch to say that he was the big difference with their offense last year. So is it expected to kind of, the numbers are eye-popping of what the offense as a whole did. I mean, is it expected to reach the same levels this year offensively?
I mean, the problem will be the wide receiver play is going to be a lot different. The B-back production, the featured running back position, you lose almost 2,000 yards there between St. John Days and Zach Lasky. And, that's a lot to come up with, and they have an easy road, but if, they can play pretty well offensively, I think defensively they're going to be a lot better, and that could be the difference, and they could be a team that could easily win the Coastal again, because if you look across the board, the best team maybe on paper is North Carolina, and I'm not sure if they can spell defense, let alone play it. So, it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what happens because the Coastal's wide open right now, again, like it was last year.
Well, I was going to ask you about that kind of last, but we might as well just jump into it.
I just don't believe in Fedora at North Carolina. I think, to me, on paper, they have the best setup. I think if Beamer had fired his offensive coordinator and got a better offensive coordinator, I would like their setup a little bit too, and they're always so good on defense, but their offense is just atrocious, and Beamer is pretty terrible. I like the hire, but I think it's going to take 2 or 3 years for him to really get that thing turned around. I think they'll still be a bowl team, but to me,
I don't know. What do you have any confidence that this is the year they actually put it together and actually play well consistently?
Golden's coaching for his job, so if they're going to put it together, this is it. I think, you know, if they can't win it this year, I think he's gone. I mean, they've just been, for whatever reason, unable to, you know, really get in the mix since they've been in the ACC. And it's kind of disappointing because they would, if they were powerful, that would really help the conference out. In terms of always really talented, maybe the third most talented team in the conference, and they can't win. And you look at it on paper and you're like, well, that's a stacked team. And then they get, you know, steamrolled by Georgia Tech or Duke beats them or just a lot of weird losses from them. And, I think that they'll win like 8 games, but I don't know. Like, they lost a lot of people. If they had Duke Johnson back, I would feel a little bit better about it. But Kaya's a pretty good quarterback. You know, he lost a lot of his weapons too, though. So a lot of question marks in Miami.
Like it at least maybe was in the driver's seat to replace him. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. Out with an ACL injury. How much of a loss is that? I mean, it's a guy who hasn't really played, so it's all kind of potential, but what was he going to be the guy, and is that kind of make the situation even worse not having him?
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of in the driver's seat. I think it was going to be a committee situation no matter what between him and then some other guys, but they ended up losing him. They lost Quade Weimer-Skirch, who was a freshman that came in and was from, and he had a tremendous last couple weeks of spring. And then they have a kid named Patrick Skov, who they got from Stanford, who is the starting fullback for the Cardinal. And he'll come in and give them another veteran body. And then they signed two other freshman running backs, Mikel Lance-Davis and Marcus Marshall, is Keith Marshall, UGA's little brother. Those two guys will come in, and I think between the four of them, they'll pick three guys. They'll kind of rotate those three guys situationally, but it's going to be.
And then flipping over to the other side of the ball, because we should probably talk about Georgia Tech's defense as well. Outside of being really good at forcing fumbles, which we all saw at Heinz Field last year, what do we need to know about Georgia Tech's defense for this season? What's some of the keys there?
Well, they got back two players that they thought they were going to have last year. Jabari Hudd-Days, defensive tackle. He was academically ineligible last year. He has worked really hard. He's back. He's an NFL caliber defense, really experienced secondary. They have, you know, they go 4-2-5 a lot. When they go 4-2-5, they can start four seniors. And in their base 4-3, they're starting four seniors, two at corner and, you know, two at safety that have played a lot of football and are really good. DJ White might be one of the best corners in the ACC. And then, you know, Jamal Golden and DeMont Smith at safety are very good, too. So, you know, they've done, you know, pretty well piecing together this defense. And last year was a growing year, so, with the offense.
So, you know, kind of wrapping it up here as we talk to Kelly Quinlan from JacketsOnline.com, TheRivals.com site that covers Georgia Tech. You said, you know, 2016 maybe could be the year that they look to put together another 10, maybe 11-win season. What's the expectation for this year? What do you expect this team to do, and what, I guess, would be, you know, nothing's ever acceptable for the fans, but you know what I mean? What's kind of a reasonable expectation for this team?
You know, I think 8 wins. I think they have a good chance at winning the Coastal, you know, with the other Coastal teams, because there's so many wild cards with Virginia Tech and Pitt, and, you know, it's just hard to tell who's going to be good this year. And I think that, you know, they get the people that are the toughest to play on the road, mostly at home, except for Clemson. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that works out.
All right, Kelly, thanks as always for the information and the insight. We appreciate it. We'll probably talk to you again before that game on October 17th, and then we'll see you down in Atlanta.
All right, thanks, Chris.
All right, thanks. That's Kelly Quinlan from Jackets on the – I mean, Paul Johnson really kind of has it in place. And Kelly said it best. I mean, he's got his quarterback. He's got a redshirt sophomore, Justin Thomas, who he's got 3 years left with, you know, this year, 2016 and 2017. And when you're set up like that, and Thomas was great for them last year, he set a record for Georgia Tech quarterbacks for rushing in a single season. When you're set at quarterback, you can do a lot of things. And when you're set at quarterback in that offense, you can really turn it up, and you can really have a lot of success. And a new defensive coordinator and someone new kind of designing the defense and scouting opponents and putting in different plans. We'll see how Pat Narduzzi does against Georgia Tech's offense when, we certainly saw in the last 2 years that Matt House's defense didn't do that well. And, you know, again, I'll point to talent. I'll say that talent was an issue, but, you know, even when they had Aaron Donald, they didn't do very well. And I think part of it was due to schemes and fits and that kind of thing. And Kelly's right. I mean, the ACC Coastal is going to be, Virginia should be pretty lousy. Duke, I think, is putting a little something together, but they're going to have to do a little rebuilding. And then there's Pitt. There's no reason Pitt can't compete for this ACC Coastal title in 2015. The only reasons I would point to is historical evidence of the last few years where they haven't been able to do it. But new coach, new energy, blah, 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 the best offense they've had in 6 years, maybe they've got a chance. Maybe they've got a chance. With Georgia Tech is going to be a tough one going down there on October 17th playing at Atlanta. Great road shot, the defensive ends that they've got. And they can either get better personally, individually, and the coaching staff can help them with different kinds of pressure packages, or they can continue to struggle. And my guess is it'll be somewhere in between. And then good to talk to Kelly Quinlan. Thanks to him for joining us, getting a preview of Georgia Tech. Thanks to Danny for producing this show. We appreciate it. Good job by him as always. We will be on the message boards, panther-lair.com. Talk with all your closest Pitt fan friends, hundreds and thousands of them, panther-lair, about the mighty Syracuse Orange. We'll see you in 2 weeks. This is the Panther Lair Show on Triple Live Radio.